Today is Monday. It is December. What's the date today?
17th, I think.
It's the 17th? I believe you. Okay, so it's December 17th, 2018.
No, let me make sure.
This is Liz Strong for the Brooklyn Historical Society. And we're just checking the date.
The 12th, 17th, yes.
Yes, okay, we got it right. So, Mispo, why don't you introduce yourself and just say when and where you were born?
Okay, my name is Mispa Abdin. I was born 1969 in Bangladesh, District Sylhet, post office Biani Bazaar.
Tell me a little bit about your life growing up. What do you remember about your childhood?
I remember the time that the memory that back that my father, I was living with my stepmother. My father lived in the United States. That I remember. But I remember my grandmother died in 1979. That's the earliest I can go. And 1982, June 28, 1982, I did arrive to New York with my stepmom, my two stepbrothers, stepsister, and one of my older brother.
Do you have any memories of life with your grandmother and what it was like?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
I remember my grandma because my mom died when I was very young. Perhaps someone says 6 months, someone say 8 years, but I don't know exact date. I remember every time people, in our tradition, people always, when they go to, how guest comes to the house, they always bring fruit or food for them. I always remember my grandmother always save all the food she won't eat, save it for me. And I would not eat because she was sick. She had a kidney failure and she's homebound. So I used to feel disgusted. Some reason that she's not clean, and she used to give me most of the time I would refuse it. Sometimes I did take it, then I used to throw away.
Why was your father in the U.S.? What was he doing here?
For what I heard, even from my father, he came. He had some fight when he was a teenager, so he had to leave the house because my grandfather was gonna beat him up. So in our tradition, they do something, they really get beat up. So he ran into working for the ship, and then he, in 1948, he came before, I think sometimes late 30s, but he got caught, went back. 1948, he finally came and arrived and stayed here. And also the story that I heard, until 1960s, early 60s, that he never communicated with my grandfather and grandmother. They thought were dead or something. So suddenly, sometime early 60s, he went back. That's how my grandfather and grandmother found out that he's alive.
Wow. And did he get married when he went back?
Yeah, that's how my grandmother and grandfather forced him to get married, because they thought if he leaves again, he's never going to come back. So that's why my grandfather going to force him to get married to my mom. And yes.
And you have no memories of your mother?
I have no memories of my mother.
Tell me about your siblings a little bit.
For my mom, we are four brothers. And then I have a step, because I was a baby, so grandmother was sick. And the time, my grandfather died before I born. So I heard the story that my uncles, my grandmother forced my dad to get remarried, so I was a little kid, so someone can take care of me. That's usual in a third world country. So he got married, left here, then I have a two brothers and one sister, stepsister, but nobody can tell but us, because we still live together. We have no fight and everything, but we have nothing. There's no bridge, they are step. We all are same. You know, we don't have that kind of stepbrother, so we don't even say that. You know, it's not in our culture. It's my brother, it's my brother, it's my sister, it's my sister.
Tell me about your stepmother a little bit.
My stepmother, you know, and one thing about third world country, once you open the door, you come out, and the whole world to you. You don't home, you go play, go to school, go to mosque, and then go to play when time only time you come back in the evening. So it doesn't, you don't Yeah, we could go to house only time we need to eat. Otherwise, we never home. Especially, my father wasn't there, so there was no restriction. You know, even they do yell, but who listens?
What was she like?
No, she's a great mom. She's a great mom. She always cook, take care of us. Yes, but she, yeah, my grandma, she loves me, but she also yells at me most because I'm the one who gives us the most problem.
So when you moved to the U.S., it was after your grandmother died.
Yes.
So tell me about what that transition was like.
I remember the earliest I can go, my grandmother died. And then I remember my father applied for us. So I think it took a couple of years to get everything ready. Same time, my uncle also applied for my aunt and my cousin. So actually, they both of them is like maybe a week different. They embassy call us for the pick up the visa, so we do. So our cousin and us, we came to United States, same date, same year.
What do you remember about Brooklyn or the U.S. in general when you came?
I remember exact word that my older brother picked me up from JFK Airport. When I was parking, we were looking, because of course we came from a very remote suburb and to city, one of the best city in the world. Cars, a lot of houses. I see a kid playing football on the sidewalk. So, you know, as a small kid, you know, I always like sports. So I say definitely maybe a week later, I was dreaming, smiling that I'm gonna play. But actually, I said earlier, it never happened because where my father actually, most of his American life, he spent on 60, that's where he used to live, downtown. That's where most Bengali used to live. It was very rare, but they used to live there. So when he applied and we got our visa, he moved to Ozone Park, Queens. He thought this neighborhood was better than downtown. It used to be very bad downtown. So he moved here. But we came where the border of Brooklyn and Queens, one of the most craziest places in the earth, is East New York. We've been picked and bullied all. Growing my life up, it's been always picked, bullied, fight every other day. That's the normal life. Growing up, it was a nightmare. Even today, my wife sometimes say, why you sometimes scream out? I wake up screaming, you know, and I remember those things a lot of time. Because my two older brother was working, my brother, everybody in school, we are only a couple family there, a couple of a few family. But as a young kid, we are the probably first family. Of course, I came when I was young. I was learning English. I did have an accent. I still have an accent, because I do speak other language same times. We've been called Gandhi. We used to spit on us. They used to smell spice, we have stinks. They always pick on us, bully us, we had a fight. I was a spoiler, I don't take, because my one thing about my mom died when I was young, so anybody call MF, I don't take it. It doesn't matter, 1 or 10, I used to swing at them, they used to beat the shit out. And they used to beat the hell out of me. But you know, I remember one time my cousin, I was coming from the school, and I was like, 10, 15 kid was saying about MF and say something, and I got turned and hit him. 10 guy was beat me, kicked me, punched me, I get up. A lot of good kids said, Mr. Stay down, you'll be safe. But me, long as I can stand up and fight back, I fight back and pass up. Many time I did fight and I pass up. Most of the time I used to go home black and blue. One time my father got so tired of me, he put me some, why didn't you go to karate school? So I joined the karate school too. But you know, karate school is karate school, you learn. But yeah, I'd be able to defend myself sometime, you know. One thing about martial arts is confidential, you know, you cannot fight them, you cannot beat them, you know, best thing is run. So I ran. The worst thing in the nightmare growing up in East New York, because we did get trouble a lot of time, we call 911, especially 75th prison, even today is one of the craziest prison. We call 911 instead of arrest them. They used to always be. We are six brother and a sister. From my knowledge, and you can check, we have no crime history. We don't steal. We don't do drugs. But all of our six brother got arrested. Not one time, many times. because we call 911 for help. You know, we are like one against 100, but they always picked us up because it was Italian. The officer was, hey, you know, that's what happened. We got picked up many times. As we speak, the house that we live in, Forba, we still have the bullet hole.
If someone shot at your house?
Yeah, one time we had a fight, and then they came back later with a gun and shot at the door. We still have, it was a metal door, we didn't change it, we still have the door. If you go, you can take the picture, still bullet hole, still exists, and it's been almost over maybe 30 years.
Your family lives in the same house?
No.
Oh.
We moved 2 blocks away. It's also our house, but you know, it's working in a land of opportunity. Now we are better off than before. We bought a new house. Actually, we bought a land, then we built the house, and we built a 2 house together. Each floor, each brother lives. We are 5 brothers live in one big building, and 1 brother live in another building.
So you're all still close.
Yeah, we are very close.
That's great. So, around this time, your childhood here, your father was also being kind of a hub for new immigrants moving to the neighborhood. Yes. Can you tell me about that a little bit?
Yes, my father actually, he was the oldest one and most respected one in here. Anybody need any suggestion looking for a job, my father always there to suggest. Anything they do, they always take suggestion from my father. And my father always give them suggestion. If anybody comes to America, everybody send it to go to. My father's name was Sattar. So they come, my father let us sleep on sometime in sofa, sometime in carpet, depend how many people are there, until my father helped them find a job. So when they job, they move on. And that's how my father worked. And I used to be always a troublemaker, so my father always sent me, okay, take this gentleman or them to Manhattan, walk. If you see help wanted, let them walk in and look for jobs, hospital, anything. So it's just me, and then my father is also awesome. So when people didn't find my dad, they used to come to me. And I just enjoy helping it. Even today, and that's what I do. I enjoy people, and it's give me a joy because people only time, people need your help when they have a problem. And this is the time you want to help them. I'm just passionate because in my life, I would not say 100, I would say thousands of people I help in my life. Even today, our organization will be able to help at least 50 to 100 people per day. And my phone became, is like worldwide, and especially in New York, it's 311. Anything, unless they don't know anything, they call me, Mr. That happened, do you know? Even somebody got hit and run and got killed last week, a Bengali kid. He came to United States only 3.5 months. The first call, Mr. Do you know? But I went to the kid's family house, my condolences, and see if we can help you, you know. And his family was well off and back home. They take care of everything, so. But still we went, and I went myself.
So how did those early days helping your father connect people turn into founding the community center?
Yes, because, okay, as I said, those days, New York City used to be crazy. So always when Bengali people used to come, they would look for where Bangladesh people live. So we were living there, and because of our troublemaker fighting, all those people know, okay, they are Bangladesh, yeah, they're safe. So they moved in. Now I would say about around 70 to 80,000 Bengali people live in this neighborhood because of my dad and one of my dad friend, which is my uncle, Moina Mama. So because of those two gentlemen, this whole community is Bangladeshi because of them.
What kind of changes did you experience growing up as more and more Bangladeshi people moved here?
Okay, before, taking step out from house was a nightmare. Now we can walk in the neighborhood, sleep on the sidewalk and street, we would not think and hesitate. Before, going just to go to a store, shopping store, buy clothes or buy food, it was a nightmare. It's like, I know our parents and others, unless it's needed, they would not come out from the house. But us, yes, we know, but we still sneak out. We know we're going to have a problem, but always, every time when we step up, we look who's there. If we see kids are there, We might go 20 block round and go. But, you know, it's even a park. We used to go there, sit and wait until they finish playing. Then we go. Otherwise, we go start. They bully us, beat us, get out of here. We don't want you there. Yeah.
But now?
Now it's totally different, yeah.
And you're raising your own kids in this neighborhood, right?
Yes.
Tell me about their life and their education.
One thing which is true, I went to same school where my children is going. It's just PS 214. But that one thing is, when I went to PS 214, it was a very good school, but it's not good as before. Now my children go there because we live here and this is a zoning school. Thanks God my children doing well. They are going to specialized high schools and middle school. The school system is not good as before because our community, lack of knowledge, lack of education, our system right now, the principal and teacher, you know, they just come here for work. They don't do what needs to be done. I've been fighting many times. There was, before I remember when I used to go to school, there was a cross guard all over. Now, there was a street, and Pitkin-Abbey is kind of semi-highway. I've been advocated for like 3 years school in the cross guard. They didn't. So one day, one guy hit and run, broken rib, and this child is paralyzed. Finally, end up they give them a cross guard. But after someone, life been destroyed, and now you put in cross guard. But finally, it happened. The child have to sacrifice for everybody. That's what I say. Even school. Every time I don't go drop my children anymore. I let my wife say I do it, because every time I go, I have problem. I fight because I talk. That's been, you know, school system is education where you go and learn. Even the PS 214 go to school. If I go there, I went many times. You sign in, wait, looking for somebody to talk, saying because you need help. You will see them talking. One time about, what was I think last March in 2018, I went there sitting for like 5-7 minutes and then talking. I got so mad, I smashed on the desk. I said, "What am I here, stranger here? I'm here to help." And then, and they, and it was like 60% Bengali. Not even one person Bengali staff in the office. One parent coordinator is Bengali, but he born and raised, he's scared of his job. He's not very helpful, and nobody else. There's halal issue and kosher issue. There's over 67%, not even one person. Because I tell my children, do not eat what's given because they might be poor, because we don't allow to poor. There's not even one person, Bengali, to tell what eat good for them, and even 60%. This school is miserable, and I don't know, not state doing anything to. I've been advocating in the community board. I've been voted to the superintendent. Nothing has happened. So still we live in a democracy country, but it's totally controlled. They do whatever they want. City, it just, I don't know. I have no word.
Yeah. To go back to your own young life a little bit, you mentioned that you saw people playing soccer and you had played soccer back home in Bangladesh. And you eventually came to start your own league, right?
Yeah. When I came, we couldn't able because of this whole we never had it. So after we came here, my father, friends, family, the Bengali, he took us, and we met all the young kids throughout New York City, even New Jersey and Patterson. We found out quite a few people that they're interested, they want to play soccer. So I don't remember how the first started, but it was early 82. It was a lot of Bengali also live in downtown Manhattan. So we invited them. There was only soccer field by the East River. So everybody come from Patterson, Flushing, Jacksonite, Ozone. There was Jacksonite, it wasn't exist from Ozone Park. We used to go and play soccer there. So it was quite a lot, and then we playing. And then eventually after following year, let's get the permit. I remember I got the permit, and then we had a soccer league. Is a competition again. There was a team, like, I think, five or six. There was a Manhattan team, Ozone Park is near team, Queens team, and New Jersey team. And that's how we grow eventually. I was a soccer player. I used to do the most of the footwork. I used to buy the ball. I remember people couldn't afford the cleat, so I used to buy a cleat. And it's grow. And then as a player, I organize everything, but we have senior brotherhood goes there to support. We make them as the executive committee, and they run the community, and we play. And it's grow. And still this. And first we named the Bangladesh Football Federation. In 1998, we converted into Bangladesh Football Council. So because a lot of people want to play cricket and other, but it never happened. We still, Bangladesh Football Council is still playing soccer. Now every year we have about 12 teams. We have like 4 teams from Brooklyn, 2 teams from Bronx, and then Queens. We have a team come from New Jersey. There's a team comes from Connecticut. So we have a 12 team, and it's still going on. And the great thing, so over 30 years we've been playing, and I know at least, I would say, more than 20, between 20 to 30,000 kids plays in the league and moved on. And we keep them busy and become, and every summer it's become, is the end of the soccer league get really nasty because everybody wants to come. They even hire people from England. They get national player from Bangladesh to play in the whole league. That's how it became big, it became.
And you told me it was in the summers it became time for like families to get together?
Before that's the only place where Bengali able to chance to meet them, yes. But now it became so saturated, it's not like before. Before every Sunday, all the family, kids, mother, father used to go to prayer, used to see lots of people. Because people wasn't safe out there in the neighborhood, so there was the best opportunity to go out there, play with the kid, go to the park, enjoy it, yes.
So having that
organized
kind of solidarity really brought people out.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about, you mentioned when you were a little kid in Bangladesh, you would sort of be out all day and you could go to all these places, including the mosque. How was prayer and religious practice different when you came to the United States?
Oh, first we came, there was no mosque. There's only one prayer that Eid every year 2 times, and the Friday. Friday is one of the special prayer. So Friday we couldn't go, school is open. So when it's summertime, we used to go to Manhattan, Madina Masjid, there's only one masjid was exist that actually Bengali community. When my father was there early, they built it around late early 60s. I'm not sure what, but when we were here, that's the only mosque there. So we used to go there to prepare. But those days, we don't even know what month was the Ramadan, what month was nothing was known because we are so, yeah, disconnected from all this. Yeah, but now community grow now is every day has been updated. Yeah. Especially the electronic media now took over the world. You don't need to know anything. They wake you up every morning.
Tell me about starting the first mosque in East New York.
First mosque in Michigan, as I told you, as a young boy, when with my father, see, we've been always fighting, we're never praying, and there's nothing there too, because my father and my friends, uncles, father, whoever was there, they afraid that we will adopt American culture, we're not going to be a Muslim anymore. So I remember there was one of my father's friend, we also call him uncle, he have a house on Forbes Street, and he have a garage behind. So that's where my father also have a cousin who came to United States as a student visa. So he is not allowed to work. So my father used him to teach us Islamic thing. So he get paid a little bit so he can able to pay his subway or whatever, his pocket money. So that's where we start first Islamic school, small school. I think we are like 4 or 5 students. And then late, I think on 84 exact, remember what month was it, 1984. They rent out the basement of last house of Forba and corner house of Forba in Glenmore. They bought it, first started in basement, and then the owner wants to sell it. Then all the community gather, raise some money, and then they bought the house. Then one house bought it, then second house went for sale, they bought seller. But when first one bought, that was a nightmare. People, I remember, was praying. It was the 4th of July. Some Italian kid went, opened the door, they threw a bomb inside us while we was praying. And many times, our window been broken, somebody thrown, they used to throw garbage in front of the door. It's whole drama. But eventually, time passed, more people came in, now mask is so big, now it's totally controlled by the community now.
So when did you start construction on Alaman?
Alaman construction, I think it started sometimes late 90s, I'm not sure, but it was probably 90, it's between 96 to 98, is construction started. Yeah, but it's still under construction. The reason, one thing, because East New York is one of the most underserved community, people who cannot afford, they are here because with border of Brooklyn, Queens, and all the crimes are here, the rent, it was very unsafe neighborhood. That's why rent was cheap, so they people who can afford, they are living here. The Alaman is funded by poor people with pennies and dimes and nickels. That's why when they first, the architect, they didn't have money to do the architect. So one of the community, he was a Bengali architect. He used to be professor in Brooklyn Tech High School. He's the one who gave pro bono, did the architect. And that's why they have able to architect. And it wasn't really, really professional. And they start the foundation with the small money. The worst of the worst, the people who was an executive community, they are not educated, they are lack of construction experience, lack of resources, lack of money. That's why architects did one pillar at a time, second pillar, third pillar, because the money was short. And that's why it's never been grown. And the building department, through the time, the code being changed. When they was started like this, second year code said they have to break it again. And the worst part, because of the community growing so big, they did not follow, because of lack of education, they did not follow the code of building department. When they had first floor, they put another wall and made another more space for people to pray, not going by building. So the money they spend in this building, they could have done it long time ago, just because of lack of knowledge, lack of education, and changing of building code. They have so much construction and so much breakdown again and built it again. And that's all, a lot of waste money went, because when you have, if this costs $10 and you have a $5, you're going to do what's $5 for. And the time you have $10, this has been changed, you have to do it. You understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I don't know if it makes sense to you.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
So that's what, and the truth is, what I see, because I'm from birth till here, majority people who on our executive board, they put it because they are senior, respected, they're not well educated, they're not well knowledge, and that's why the situation, even today, even though if they finish this building, I doubt they will get CEO. The reason is, the time they did the architect and they didn't finish it, the building law been changed, and this building should become this way, then slide, then go, then actually they built it there, so they have more spaces. They didn't care. They think it's like somewhere in remote third world country, you can do whatever you want, you can build it and do it, but it's not anymore. Even they, 3 months ago, building department came, shut it down, it was closed for a month. Even this time, they give 90 days to open it. After that, they might close it again. Because nowadays building department, more than certain food, you have to put fire sprinkler, and fire is so expensive, this community cannot afford it. There's no way they can afford it, and it's a huge building. But you know, matter of 30 years of dimes, penny collected, they build that up. But because of less source of resource, lack of education, lack of qualification, that's why it's not finishing, and I don't know when it's finished, but I really hope that finish and they get CEO, because this Alaman have a history, and this neighborhood, and through my eye, I know at least in this small population, at least 10 people got shot and killed in this neighborhood. In my own knowledge and in my own experience, I've seen, even one of my friends, we were standing here, we heard the gunshot. And we were talking, it was a gunshot. 5 minutes later, I heard one of friend got shot and he killed. So So it's happening. There's a street football shit they name after Mijanur Rahman. People bullied. Then everybody got out, beat up, and then they came with a gun. They shoot the guy and kill him. It's happening every day. Last year, every year somebody get killed. There's another Grima, who's next. So last year his imam got killed. Before that, there was a guy got killed on about 3 blocks away from there. It's almost every year.
And you said this is part of the history of the mosque?
Yeah. And they got picked because of Muslim. They got picked also as Bengali.
How many people does the mosque serve when it's open?
Oh, that's large. That's large. If I tell you that, that's way 3 times more than capacity.
And I heard they sometimes use the park nearby as well?
Yeah, park, DOT parking lot. Every year we have a prayer about 7,000 to 10,000 people. That's actually I do it, or beg this organization, because in our religion say, especially to Eid holiday, you should do it in an open space where everyone, because my father, in our tradition, we don't hug parents, brother every day. So Eid day after you go to prayer, you finish, you hug your brother regardless. All your neighbor, all your friend, you just hug. You've seen that. They hug each other. And that's why if everybody comes to one lot, they pray and they hug. This is a good tradition. And it should not keep anything bad that me and you had a disagreement. It should not keep any grudge on that day. If there's any grudge, any fight, any misunderstanding, after prayer, you should forgive everybody. This is the way you go to heaven, because you cannot keep that. Once you die, you cannot do anything. So this is it. I would like to show you a picture that okay. You will not believe it, but that's how much people. Here. You cannot see from one end to another end. This is DOT parking lot.
Oh, wow. It's just a sea of people.
Yeah, a sea of people.
And you definitely can't see it all where they end. You can see trees poking up behind them, but that's it.
Yeah, right 1 block away from the mosque. That's, you know, our organization decide, you know what? They always have a problem. And I'm always young, so sometimes in our society, when you're young, you're dumb and stupid. They won't listen. So that's why I opened back this, you know, keep away from religion and help whatever they can. And back this became very popular because there's people having so much problem, little thing, and they burn inside. They don't know where to go and get help. So when we opened back this, people coming like poor. Miss Paino, I have this situation. Miss Paino. And we're able to help them. And there's a lot of simple thing, you know. I'm very part of community board 5 and elected, because elected official come to us because we have the numbers and everything. So anytime people come on this problem, we try to help in our office. If we cannot help them, we always call them and they tell us, there you go. Your problem, you need to go to that office. They will take care of it. Because one thing about New York City, they have almost all kind of agency out there to help. But they not, those resources, a lot of people are not aware of it. And it's not been commercial, you know, unless it's a profit. Nobody tell you what to do and where to. There's a lot of nonprofit. They have $1 million of funding. They're providing service, but they're not reaching out. And New York City, one of the hard-to-reach community. There's so much remote neighborhood. They just go to, and it's tough because of the expensive. They work 7 days, 6 days. One day they get off, they got to do their laundry. They have the other work. So they don't know where they're. So back, this is like open door for everybody.
Tell me about starting that organization. How did you find a space?
First, I told you, after my father passed away, I went to Bangladesh. When I came back, people are calling me in soccer, Miss, but this problem, my family got tired, you know, keep this problem out of the house. Please tell them, tell your people not to come on 2 a.m., ring the bell, call them middle of the night. So I decided to open the office. So I found one of my cousin own a house and he looking for rent, is one bedroom cheap. I said, why didn't you give it to me? So he listened, he gave it to me. I break the first apartment with my friends and everything, made a two office, conference room and reception, and start open it. And it just became a community center, because no, there's, and one thing about in Bangladesh, once day sunrise, people open door, their door, and they got whole world. They're not used to sitting inside, like most Western, you know, you, once you're home, you're inside the house. But no, they, once they open, they're outside. Like if you go to country, you're not home. So they have no place to go. So people comes there, that problem, this problem, citizenship application, they want to apply for their family, they have a tax problem, they have job problem. A lot of, and also there's a lot of people don't have computer at home. Lots of people do have a computer, but they don't have internet. So this is one-stop source. They come for internet, computer, write a letter, send a letter, proofreading. So people like pouring. And then and it became so popular, not only Bengali community. Nowadays, about 60% are not Bengali, 40% are Bengali, but still is Bengali remote area. And we grow, the worst part, we don't get funding, because honestly, I'm not in this field. My father was in this field. My whole generation, I took the field just to help people. So most of the money came from my family, friends. I robbed my friends. Hey, come on, give me that money. I need to help those people. So, but one thing, everybody did help me. Community did help me. Especially, I greatly thanks my brother, older two brothers. They always supported me. They know that money that I took, I help people. The only thing my brother don't like, they always give me money. Here, you have a kid and wife, do something for yourself. But instead, I wish those money to help the community. And they say, okay, you know, gotta stop. Do you have a life to do? But I find, I know one thing, end of the day, I know my wife, my children, roof over their head. End of the day, I know my freezer filled with the food. But I know people. They're crying, they couldn't able to pay their bill. The electricity will cut the line or the house. So I help them. I lend them. Sometimes they give me back, sometimes I don't. But it's just one thing. When I see people's tears, it's like, and to me, I would do anything for those people. And I can tell you, 1,000 people came to walk into our office with a tear, and they walked smiling. And the best part in my life, when the old or young who comes to the tear and we help them and they smile and rub my hand and say, God bless you and the parents. And that's giving me my joy. At least this is the best thing that I can give to my parents. And I still, and I always, you know, I'm an outgoing. I did all everything. I'm a sportsman. I was a street person, been fight. I grew up with everything. But I went through hardship. But that's why I like to, what I went through, I don't want those people to go through. And that's what I'm doing. You can see those mom right now, the rent, because of a zone economic development, the rent is so high, one person income, not enough to pay the rent and support the family. If those women, they probably never went to school in Bangladesh. They took a step up, coming, learning Spanish, a lot of people asking for job. We have a trace record of 181, last 3 years, 181 women graduate from our ESL class. I would say at least 30% got a job already, and they're looking for job. And we also helping them job. There's a lot of job before come, we push them. But a lot of people that have qualified, because the qualification are very low in our community, but and all the services provided for, we not funding. We had a little funding from New York Foundation, thanks, they are nice, but majority funding from pulling from here. But we're working.
One thing you told me about on the phone is that you're also active in organizing multicultural festivals and events like that.
Yeah, same lot, let me tell you. I think I do have some pictures I would like to show you. Yeah, I have those, let me see.
Was that a Ferris wheel?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I do multicultural, I have a lot of vendor, different kinds of Latino food, Caribbean food, Bangladeshi food, Asian food, and there's a lot of cultural clothing. Here, I bring all those kiddie ride.
Mm-hmm.
to the event.
Teacups, Ferris wheels.
Yeah. Those are the reason I bring it, because this community, as I said, they cannot even have enough money to sustain themselves. They cannot afford to take their children to Luna Park or Great Adventure. So, you know what I do? I rob my family, friends, and spend about $30,000 to $40,000 in the neighborhood, bring all those rides into the neighborhood, and provide all the multicultural live event, dance, cultural show plus, what do you call, uniform, you know, what do you call, I just cannot find the word. So the main thing is to bring everybody in. So right now, if I walk to a neighborhood and if kids see me, they go, uncle, it doesn't matter what race, what color, they call me uncle. Uncle, when is the event? Even they know it's on the summer, because this is the only entertainment thing they get in summer. And it's not federal, not state, not city, we find it ourselves. Because the kids are kids, they want to enjoy, right? They see everything on TV, but you know, they can't afford to go. So, and the most successful, because of that, we decrease, I would say, at least 50% of crime, because as you know, New Yorker, Latino speaking among themselves, Bengali speak among themselves, African American speak among, they not create, no one creating bridge like to do, help know each other, not state, not federal, not city again. So our organization bring 5 days multicultural event to create bridge between all different culture. I have my own experience. One time was my wife was busy, so she sent me. My son was crying, he wanna go to ride, so I took him to the ride. So there's another lady, her son also, and she goes, hey, you know your son and my son classmate. So I found this is a very interesting, because this is the way she had a chance to talk to me. Yeah. So where everybody, all different culture come to this kind of event, they enjoy, buy, share, and they meet each other, they find it, way to start conversation with them. And that, because of that, all the neighborhood comes here. Now everybody know who lives in the neighborhood, and that makes the neighborhood safer. But now you will see a lot of Latino going to Bengali's house, a lot of Bengali going to Latino, a lot of Bengali going to African, when they are coming. They became friends, and that's where our multicultural made that happen.
That's great. Yeah. And you said the services at Bhakti's also reach more than just Bengali people.
Oh, yes.
Tell me about staffing. Who works there?
Mostly volunteers and mostly part-time. I do work in one of my family's supermarket. The salary that I get, I use my salary to pay their salary. One thing I don't have, people have a goal, I have money, buy a new car, buy a new house. I don't have that goal. I just enjoy being, and I even enjoy, there's a lot of educated, talented seniors out there, because of the country change that their credential not valid in America, so they have nothing. So I hired, right now I hired one journalist. He was an international journalist. He used to work for United Nations. So I said, what are you doing? Nothing, come work for and help this organization. And I'm paying him from my own salary. I'm helping, and also I can say I have one of the greatest brother in the world. I'm 50 years old, they still supporting me. But one thing, they know what I'm doing is a noble work, and also they like it because what I do, that's also give them a reputation. Everywhere they go, your Mr. Brother, they get respected, because I've been helping all my life. and we do, our numbers are so big anywhere that everybody knows us. So our family became like a pioneer. And not only in Brooklyn, East New York, if you go to Jackson Heights, if you go to Astoria, anywhere in New York, even globally, people know Abdin family. We are not rich, but one thing, for helping, noble work we've been doing all, even my brothers, you know, people die in the neighborhood, people cannot afford to give them bury. We do help them bury them. People have cancer, they cannot have money to treatment. We do help them, whatever, we help them. Thanks God, my brothers are like me. But they are more secure themselves than I am. They have their insurance, but I don't. I don't know if I die today, my family will be empty-handed tomorrow. But you know, tomorrow never know what happens. So I help what I think is need to be done today. I do it. I don't know what's gonna happen tomorrow, so I wait for next day tomorrow. When tomorrow comes, I will think about tomorrow. That's me.
I have another question that you reminded me of. Back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, when your father was here, and in the early days when you came, there weren't many mosques, as you said, to go to yet. But I imagine there wasn't access to Muslim funeral services.
No.
Did he help people connect with that at all?
I remember when I came in, majority of the... Before that, he would not find any Bengali cemetery or graveyard. Unless nobody there, they buried it. The majority of people, after we came, anybody died, we'd raise money and send it back home. I would say 95% who died on those days, their body been sent to Bangladesh. They always, because one thing in common in our culture, they always like to bury next to parents, a family graveyard. Even nowadays, because nowadays we have a cemetery in Long Island, Washington, because now the kid who born in America, they never going to go back to Bangladesh to pray them. So they rather stay here. So next day, that's why now it is slightly changing.
So
even up to 90s, I would say, even up to 2000, I see most of the people who died, they used to send the body to back home, but now they don't do that.
When your father died in 95, you brought his body back to be buried next to his parents.
Yeah.
Even though they'd had that falling out when he was young.
Yeah.
And then reconnected.
Yeah.
And you said, is that around the same time that you met your wife in Bangladesh?
Yes.
Tell me about meeting her.
Not actually meeting, actually it was arranged marriage. It was arranged marriage. They've been showed many of and I was sick, and they, you know, as I said earlier, I'm a very outgoing. I'm not a person sit inside, do thing, listen, do run business. I'm always outside hustling, do sport, do thing. I'm the person who never sit down and do one thing. I'm not focused on that. I want to like to expand, like travel around, go play, you know, meet people, do things. And my family was, my brother was scared if he go to America and dad is not anymore, who gonna control him? Let him get married.
So who
I did came back. But when I came back, there was a lot of fight here. Lots of fighting. Even after the Mijanura Manga killed, then my brother decided if he stay, he's going to get caught and send him to back Bangladesh. And we have a little problem because my grandfather have a lot of property in back home, and it's been taken by people because nobody's there. So I went to Bangladesh to get all those my property back, and I able to bring those back. And I was organizing it. And while I was there, my older brother and my stepmom won, and they said, no. You have to get married. Who's going to cook you? We're leaving to America. You got to stay here, take care of this problem, and somebody need to be there to cook you and take care of you. So they got married there. And I...
So what was your first impression of her when you two met?
Shy. Crazy. I never expected that I'm going to get married. It was a peer pressure and a situation. I don't know. I didn't even realize after a year later that I got married and happened. And happened so quickly. It's like a blink. When did I give up them permission to get married? It's something like it's dream happened. Yeah.
And then she moved back to Brooklyn.
No, I stayed there for 4 years because I have to come and apply for her. So I stayed there because it took 4 years. My grandfather had a lot of property. I have to settle this, organize. Now I made a structure. Nobody can take it away from our family. So while I was there, I got married. I had two daughters born in Bangladesh. They born because I'm American, they are American, but they born in Bangladesh. So 19, then I got so much involved in Bangladesh. One of my older friend told me, keep the mitzvah out of the country because if he stays, somebody might kill him. Because all the property that my grandfather had, I took it forcefully, some people, and I'm all over. That's me. So they said, you're going to kill him, take him back to Bangladesh. So he sent my immediate older brother, he went to Bangladesh the second day, he said, Mr. Wrap everything up. You going back? So, and one thing I never, in our culture, we never disrespect our older brother. If he's wrong or right, whatever they say, we keep and listen. Until today, if my brother come yell at me, I won't listen. But then one thing I can tell you, if my one tear comes out and I say I need $10,000 right now, I need it. They will give it to me without thinking. Even if they don't have it, they would borrow and give it to me. We are very...
So what was it like bringing your new family back to the United States?
Yeah, got back. then I nothing because I'm because all I grew up here most of life, so my friends are there, and our family owns Key Food, so a job is not a problem. I came here, I hunger. My brother helped to force me, gotta go run one of the kids. So they sent me the one in Brooklyn. So I run there. Actually, I used to hang out, play all night, all evening. I used to go to the Key Food, go to my office, close my door, watch the camera. I never actually watch camera. I lay down and sleep while I was a kid. So my daughter was 3 or 4. I put her on pre-K, then kindergarten, and then secondary. That's how. And then when I came in first day, people will say, you missed so many things happened, this and that. I'm back. So people start coming back again and again and again and again, and finally decide to open back this. There's a few people who did help me with the back this. It's Dharma Diaz. She's Latina. She used to work for our congressman at town. And the second person, I would say, Campbell Walter. He used to be district manager of Community Board 5. He's still working at the man. You saw him. Once he retired, I told him to come. Actually, he'd been voluntary working for it because he support my mission. I help helpless people. That's why he supports his 6 days. He come in and voluntary help people because he's a very religious person. He's a Catholic, and he support my mission, what I do. That's why he come and volunteer with me and help everybody.
So it's not just multicultural partnerships, it's interfaith partnerships.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about how that works.
You see, my back this days behind Dharma Diaz, she's a Protestant and Mr. Walter is a Catholic. One thing about once the Thanksgiving got, I can say initially I give more turkey than anybody because we own supermarket. And also in our religion, some people always the biggest culprit in my experience, because I'm a person with a reality, not book smart, I mean reality. The biggest culprit in our society, our fathers, our imam, and the pundit, because they give him all the misinformation. Because here, you all is, I'm a misper, right? You have nothing harm to me, and I have nothing harm to you. Why should we hate each other? Do you see anything? And that's why, because I have a friend, Mr. Walter, he's Catholic. If he take bullet from me, I can take bullet. Dharma did also take my bullet from me. We are human, we love each other. Religion is your person, you believe. And I always say, you're Christian, right?
No, I have no religion.
Religion. Okay, say you're Christian, or say you're ex, and I'm Muslim. Say Mr. Walter, he's a Catholic. His grandfather was a Catholic. His grandfather was Catholic. He'd been raised Catholic, and he's been told that the best religion in the world is Catholic, right? And he died. My grandfather was Muslim. My father was Muslim. Now I'm a Muslim, and my family, everybody, Muslim is the best religion, and I die. End of the day, if Catholic was right, and I'm as well, how God gonna justify that? I never had an opportunity to learn what Catholic. If I'm right and he died, how gonna justify him that he was wrong? He never had an opportunity to know what Muslim is. So how are you gonna justify? That's my own opinion. How are you gonna justify all those religions? I always say Christian is better, Muslim is better, Jewish is better. How are you gonna justify? People who born as a Jewish and he died as a Jewish, he don't know anything about Muslim. The guy who is a Christian, and born as a Christian, die as a Christian. And how God gonna justify all three people? Which one is right? Who can guarantee say that I'm right? Everybody say I'm right. But how you can guarantee you're right? That anyone can prove it? Because I know a lot of people, I'm a Muslim, everybody say Muslim, and I'm proud to be a Muslim, I'm not a Christian. And I learned, we are the best one, and I follow, because that was my father gave me a bird, and I'm here, and I'm gonna support him. But my question is, how are you going to justify who's right? So that's never came. And we discuss about it. We sit down, we gossip, talk, we bully. They bully me. I'm a Muslim terrorist. I tell them this. We do bully everything. We do live in fun. It's a joke, you know. But end of the day, we love each other. And we take feeling. And that's how we are in a community. That's how, you know, and a lot of people do not understand. And that's where I see most of the thing is a lack of education, and also I see all the government is a foreign policy, but they not doing anything to prevent that situation. Even I don't politics, but what I see, I read and see, who's Mujahideen? he created. Even ourselves, I'm American, I say we created him to fight Russia. When they done with Russia, they turn against us. Whose other group was the new group called? Same thing. We helped them to fight Saddam Hussein. Now they against us. We are the one who created monster, not them. We are. So that's where the, but first, always say, I don't know what's saying, he said, everything starts from home. I'm not big person. I'm not running the country. I'm not running the world, but I'm running my neighborhood and I'm doing every mean possible to how I can help. I just want to be a part of help and I want to be there when they need it. I don't want to be there when they're having joy. And my joy is when I help them, this is my joy. When they have joy, happy party, they enjoy, this is their joy. But everybody have different tasks, way of life enjoy. I enjoy what I'm doing.
Tell me, what do you hope East New York will be like in 10, 50, 100 years?
Not for the next 5 years, East New York will be, it's going to be like New York City. The reason which I know rezoned it, and also East New York is only 5 to 10 minutes away from JFK. It's also 30 from Manhattan. So it's one of the most convenient place, and it's been rezoning all those big developer, buying it, overpaying the land, property there, it's been taking over. The East New York people, this time, I bet you would not, in my own experience, you would not able to walk in the neighborhood in this time of hour. And you can right now, you can walk middle of the night, not going to be any problem. New York used to be one of the worst city in the America, one of the most worst gang. Even the pink, the most of the Bengali got people because of the NYCHA pink house. People used to mug. In my lifetime, I can stand middle of East New York and say, at least one or two people get mugged every day in East New York. Just the one corner of East New York. I'm talking about sitting there. Forget about the rest of the corner. 50% of people live off by mugging. And they, I noticed, beside Bengali, I see a lot of people got shot and killed. It never even, it's not on the newspaper, not on TV. Now anything happens is on the TV. Even the other day, somebody hit and ran and killed, is on TV, all over TV. Before, I seen a lot of people got shot and killed. You never hear on the newspaper, nothing. They just got crouched.
In recent years, I'm thinking about 2016 when there was the killing of the imam. The community was very activated. There was protests and things like that. Did you find that that kind of action became more frequent as the more?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
So in 2016, when the imam was shot, there were protests, there were people engaged in action, city officials had to come and answer questions. That kind of engagement, did that grow over the years?
As it's been grow, much grow. It been happened before, but it was the corner, nobody cared. There's a two problem in our East New York side. Actually, I don't want to be on this on record, but I just want to say it to you.
Oh, then let me pause it. Okay, we're back. If you don't mind answering this question on the record, have you done any outreach to the 75th Precinct, and have community relations with the police gotten any better over the years?
I was in community precinct council for around 8 years, but I walked out, I left. I want to share the accident. One time there was a one gentleman had a stroke and he died. The family and two daughter and a son went to a shelter. So all the neighborhood community came, they're a nice family, why didn't you, they can work, why didn't you help them bring out from the shelter? So I rent the apartment under my name. I brought them up, I gave two daughter a job, they working. And after her husband died, the mother have little depression. So one of the night, like well, 2 o'clock, they called me on my cell phone. Mom is woke up screaming and cursing everybody out. So I get up, I came. I say she went depression, she cursed me out, she don't want to, she want to kill everybody. So I call 911 for ambulance. So before, and you have to tell ambulance, 911, what's the problem? I think she's went depression, we need ambulance right away. So cop came, I opened the door and the cop, I brought them upstairs. Then he goes, who are you? I say, I'm Mispa, I'm a community person, I came to help them. Cop grabbed me and threw me out and got the F out of this room. No, that before that, the small kid, you know, mom is mom, running, they came, put the handcuff on her. I said, she's not that strong, you don't need to handcuff, but yeah, calm down, relax, I can tell. They go, who are you? F out of this house. They threw me out. That's how they behave. After I went to the prison, I complained to the inspector, I told on the community meeting, prison council, they didn't do nothing. They never apologized. And that day, over 200 people came, want to fight with the police officer. I told him, no, leave it alone. That's how 75th prison. So after 7 years of running prison council, even they have, and I'm a figure, I'm a founder of organization, I'm a founder of the mosque, and I'm the community person. I would say 90% of the community know. They didn't even give a shit about me. What do you think they're going to give care about other people? Excuse my language, but...
No, that's fine. I'm thinking when you talk about the rezoning and, you know, these giant buildings that are going to go up and the property prices, where do you think people will go? What will happen to this community?
It's a nightmare. Nightmare. I would say right now, 50% of Bengali lives in illegal basement because basement used to go for $800 to $1,000 because of reason. Right now, basement is goes for $2,000. And one basement, like 7-8 people sharing it because, excuse me, the minimum wage with 3-4 children, people are, you have no idea. We talk about the world. There's people in my neighborhood sleeping hungry. They're not eating enough nutrition a day, working just to meet their rent. I know people. People come here, Miss, can you give me a part-time, right? You working, but not enough. I can't even buy stuff. I can't even pay my rent. I can say it. I can bring at least 10 people right now that they owe me money because they couldn't pay the rent. I have to help them up. Won't come. And one thing, I have a bad habit. I can say no. And if I have a pocket, I cannot lie. And I give them. Some people do return it. I'm broke as hell too. But when I see people there, I forget my own pain. And that's the best thing. That's what my family hate me about. Mr. First you. But one thing I cannot sit here. When people in pain, I just can't. I help them. But I know if I fall, I have too many people to grab. Because if they fall, nobody's there to grab them.
Any last thoughts? Anything you'd like people listening to this recording to understand about your life?
There's so many. I know my tears are already coming. There's so many history there. If I tell people, tear will come automatically. It just... That's a shame that we live in one of the greatest countries in the world and people living here, they're not able to meet their daily needs to support their children. And even the school system, I said, there's so many brilliant students. And one thing, our school system is so bad, but still, yet, I would say 50% of the kids going to specialized high school, middle school. A lot of people cannot able to support their daily needs, but they make sure save money to send their children to better tutoring so they do good, so they have a better future. Pretty much that's what you can see. There's a lot of Bengali kids in school level. They're doing really well. Excuse me.
It's all right. Yeah. All right. I think we'll leave it there unless there's anything else I should have asked you.
No problem.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thank you for your stories and for your time.
Sure.